Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined by Craig Burley and Ali Moreno. We now know that Borussia Dortmund will be in this year's Champions League final after going to Paris and beating PSG by 1-0, 2-0 then over the two legs. PSG really flat in the first half, didn't come out fighting as we would expect. Hummels then would score the only goal of the game 5 minutes into the second half from a corner. PSG would lift their game a bit. In fact, they'd hit the woodwork four times overall, but in the end, they couldn't make the breakthrough, and it's Borussia Dortmund who go through 2-0 on aggregate. For more on this, let's welcome in Frank Leboeuf is with us, as is Jurgen Klinsmann. Jurgen,
listen. This is going to be the easiest show we've ever done. Because Jurgen's going to talk about Borussia Dortmund.
Yes.
And then we're going to, while we all sit here, we're going to then move on to this old German final in London.
Oh, right. What a dream. What a dream.
Give me a call when we're ready.
Jurgen, what a performance from Borussia Dortmund over the two legs.
Yeah, I think over the two legs, a very good performance, very positive performance. Defensively, it's very strong. Obviously, you know, Paris Saint-Germain hit four times the woodwork. Tonight, two times in the first leg. And so you can talk about a bit lack of, just not luck and lucky enough or fortunate enough in a certain way. But there's a reason, you know, there's a reason why you're not going through to a final. With all the chances that Paris Saint-Germain had, you know, and we were all talking about Mbappé in the second leg, and he will be the difference maker. He will come in and show up. And unfortunately, that was not the case, not the way he wants it to happen, because he's obviously the outstanding player on the planet at the moment. But he was not able to put his stamp on these two semifinal legs with Borussia Dortmund. Dortmund did it very, very solid, very strong, very tough as a unit, very tough as a team, physically present, and good leadership by the older guys in the Dortmund side, especially Mark Hummels, and they got the job done. But if you're Luis Enrique, obviously you're frustrated, you're disappointed, you're down now, because it was so much there for you to grab this final in Wembley for you as Paris Saint-Germain. It was a huge chance to do that, and they didn't do it. I was a little bit disappointed with PSG in the first half. You know, they played like, okay, you know what? We have the whole 90 minutes. We don't need to necessarily score in the first half. So they didn't create anything in the first half. And we're not decisive enough. We're not physical enough, nasty enough that, you know, you show your opponent that you want to go to Wembley. It's not you. It's me going to Wembley. They thought, okay, you know, we come back then in the second half and then take care of business. But when Mats Hummels scored this header, the game was over. Even if they had this hit four times the post. But you never really had the feeling that it will go in. It will never go their way tonight, because PSG, and Frank knows it better than me, you know, never gave you the feeling that they are so desperate and so hungry and so determined to make it happen. And Dortmund just kind of ran down the clock and played their way and were always a little bit dangerous on the counter break and got the job done.
Is it just PSG are unlucky?
No. No, Vitinha's unlucky, Mendes is unlucky. When their lottery strikes, you know, he sails over the bar, hits the woodwork, goes in the top corner. That's a little unlucky when you're shooting from that distance and clipping the post. Could go anyway. The other stuff is just bad finishing. So I don't think they're unlucky. They were not good enough. They had a great opportunity against one of the weaker sides on paper in the competition. Ironically, it turns out they've been one of the stronger sides. Dortmund have been brilliant in the Champions League, very average by their standards in the Bundesliga. You got Mats Hummels, who 18 months ago, I don't think anybody thought he could play at this level anymore with that kind of quality, particularly with the legs going. But he led Dortmund again. When somebody needed to come out and close, there was one incident in the second half where it might have been Vitinha or Zaire Emery, whoever it was, got the ball 25, 30 yards from goal to take a strike, and it was Mats Hummels, not a midfielder, that comes sprinting out to shut it down, put his body on the line. That's just, as Jurgen said, that's desire, that's effort. And 180 minutes plus injury time against a defence that's not renowned for being rock solid, PSG have not scored. And spare me the woodwork sort of stories. They were not good enough. And Dortmund were superb, organised brilliantly. I did not think they could do it for 180 minutes, maybe 90, not 180. But fair play to them. Fair play. They deserve to be in the final.
For some context, if we want to talk about why Borussia Dortmund have been in Bundesliga, their last shutout was in their Klassiker, March 30th. So we got to go back more than a month ago to find a shutout. And now, in the last week or so, two shutouts against what we consider to be one of the strongest teams in Europe, against potentially the best player in the world in Kylian Mbappe. And so you have to wonder, is there an element of good fortune? Yes, of course. But in order for you to advance in this competition, you have to have some of that. But there's also an element here of PSG, and I think Jurgen just touched on it, how there was so much lacking in urgency and in understanding the magnitude of the moment. Why do you need to wait until the last 10, 15 minutes so that you actually have sustained pressure, wave after wave after wave of attack? We think of the magical nights in Europe, and we think, say, for example, Anfield. When Liverpool are jumping and are electric and Anfield, there is wave after wave after wave of attack, and it's impossible to withstand that sort of pressure. I was expecting something similar to that from PSG from the start of the match, and it wasn't. It was sideways and back and slow and slower and predictable, and it just allowed Borussia Dortmund to comfortably sit in their shape and say, we'll work this side-to-side stuff because you're not really threatening in behind. And to that point of threatening behind, while I understand that there wasn't a whole lot of space, it wasn't until the 80th minute that we finally saw Kylian Mbappe with a diagonal movement that got in behind Nico Schlotterbeck and ahead of Mats Hummels. The 80th minute is when we see Kylian Mbappe getting in behind. While I get it, and before we go crazy on this, I understand that Dortmund's shape was good, but there were moments where there was something else to be done, to threaten him behind, to force him back so that you can have the space underneath, and that never happened with any sort of urgency, with any sort of intensity. It wasn't until the last 15 minutes where you actually saw wave after wave after wave of attack. Too late. By then, too late. This should have been the rhythm of the game to begin with, and it wasn't, and it allowed Dortmund to grow in confidence and eventually score a goal and put this match away.
Frank Leboeuf, how do you explain that nonchalant start to this game from PSG?
Well, it's always hard to be the last to speak and to find something different than the others, but it's a mentality. It's the involvement you want to put on the game, or you don't want to, and it was clearly what happened today with Paris Saint-Germain. It was a crazy atmosphere before the game, with the fans being there for 2 hours before the game, putting fantastic tifos and everything. And as soon as the game started, the atmosphere went down, because the Paris Saint-Germain didn't put all the ingredients that you need in the semi-final of the Champions League. And Ali just finished his explanation with that. The craziness. Something more than the others. Like, you are kind of desperate to get something out of it, and you go for it and you try something. David Ginola was speaking on the French television, say they try something and then they go back and they give the ball back to Vitinha or Marquinhos and they start again. They try. They never try to change for Mbappe, who sometimes was on his own, or on Dembele, starting from right to go to left, starting from left to go to right with a big round range, but pass, but they didn't try anything. So we have the tendency to also find the problems in the game, where I want to first put, for me, how strong and clever Borussia Dortmund have been on the two legs. And the way they Mbappe was unable to work on that because of the covering that they made when he had the ball. But again, and the guy talked about that, they didn't try. They didn't go for it. They were thinking. That's the problem with nowadays games, where you try to have the possession of the ball, but you forget the spirit of the game, scoring a goal. If you have 530 passes, 30 shots, and you hit four times the post and you don't score a goal in one game, you have a problem. You really have a problem. And on top of not putting all ingredients, there was a lack of efficiency clearly for Paris Saint-Germain today.
you know all these stats that say, whoa, you know...
Is that what they say? Ooh, well,
yeah, well, maybe they do, I don't know. You know, I know they're weighted heavily on PSG's favour, particularly in this game. But I still don't feel that they were brilliant. In fact, I don't think they were much better than just above average. Mm. And maybe that's down to Dortmund as well, but I think a big piece of it is them. And I think sometimes when we talk about managers and stuff, you know, there's a manager that's had a bit of a troubled season in Edin Terzic, but you've interviewed him. God bless him.
And what a lovely... I think I was the inspiration.
But I think he's a genuine guy.
Oh, he's a great guy. He was lovely.
You know, and we see a lot of these managers coming out and, you know, press conferences talking nonsense and stuff. He just... Whenever you see him, he sort of wears his heart on his sleeve. He gives you an honest answer. And so I think there's certainly a piece of me that when you look at this club and you look at the likes of Hummels at the back and, you know, what he's got available to him, which is not what some of these other clubs have, then... You got to feel quite pleased for him and what this is going to do for the end of their season. I mean, the Borussia Dortmund fans at Wembley are going to be absolutely brilliant. Just how competitive they're going to be if they can continue this form in the Champions League, maybe they will be, remains to be seen. But, you know, I think you have to at times be pleased for a manager who, at the start of the season, you're thinking, right, what does this season hold for them? They're not going to probably win the Bundesliga, which they're not and they haven't. And they're probably not going to be anywhere near the Champions League. And yet, here he is going in to this final in June, whatever it is, and, you know, he's going to be leading his team out. It's an amazing story.
It really is, Jürgen, especially when you consider how they ended the season. Last year, of course, shooting themselves in the foot, handing the title to Bayern Munich, yet they come out, struggle domestically. He's been sacked 3 or 4 times pretty much this season, but has hung on. How much credit should he receive for what he's done with this group of players to get them into a Champions League final?
My Edin Terzic should receive a lot of credit for what happened just now with Borussia Dortmund this year. Obviously, how they finished last year with this huge, huge disappointment to lose the German championship on the last day. You know, he was down, he was attacked, accused, offended everywhere, all over the media world, obviously in Germany. It was tough weeks, tough months for Edin. He pulled himself together and says, you know what, I'm going to go forward, I'm going to go through that and figure out a way to manage it. And then came another very difficult season for him with Bayer Leverkusen running off and winning the German title, first time ever. And not being consistent enough in the Bundesliga, having always problems here. And a lot of people always saying, you know, we don't know what we get from Borussia Dortmund week in, week out. One game is superb, the next game is bad. And so, but somehow he figured it out to make it work in the Champions League. Somehow this team kind of always came together when it really mattered in the Champions League games. And he had a fantastic run throughout the entire Champions League season. And now then the final at Wembley. And this is a little fairy tale story on its own with Edin Terzic in charge of it. And I'm thrilled. I'm happy for him. So he really should receive a lot of the compliments and a lot of credit for what they just did. But it was something that kind of everybody wanted so badly. It was the energy that they put together. It was their belief that they have. It was, you know, the bodies they put on the line defensively, and they threw themselves into the balls, and there was no ego player on the field from Borussia Dortmund, and that made the difference, and that's why they are in the final.
Frank, who caught your eye from Dortmund over these two legs, away from Hummels?
Oh, away from... I would say Adeyemi. I mean, by the work that he made offensively, of course, and today he had a great chance, but big save from Donnarumma. But the way he was working with Madsen to deal with Dembele defensively, especially the first leg, he was coming back, tackling Dembele many times. Today also at the beginning of the game we saw that. So I have to put him. I think the four at the back have been absolutely fantastic, working so well all together. And I can't forget Kobel, because he made a great save, even if it wasn't a good shot from Mbappe. He had that move with his left arm and then put it on a post. So I would say most of them, but Adeyemi and, of course, Hummels have been absolutely tremendous, the two legs, yeah.
let me just give an honorable mention to a player who, if indeed you are playing his position, you're I suppose, evaluated on how many goals you score. And this is the case of Niklas Fulkrug, who scored the game winner in the first leg. But today, his job may go unnoticed and unappreciated by most, but it was so important. And in playing this sort of old-school back-to-goal, it's me against the world, and whenever that ball comes out, I have to be strong enough to hold it just enough so that then we can get out on the counter, so that then we can relieve some pressure. And he did that fairly well for the first 60, 65 minutes, and it allowed Borussia Dortmund to, at the very least, have a threat in the counter. And in order to do that, you're not thinking about goals. You're thinking about, you know what, this may not go in the score sheet, this may not be appreciated by most, but this is critical for our success today. I'm going to have to hold it up so that Adeyemi can run in behind, so that there can be other runners coming from behind. But first and foremost, when that ball comes out, I'm going to have to hold it and withstand the pressure of the defenders that are trying to get that ball and create a turnover so that they can go on the attack again. So if I lose it, they're attacking again. But if I keep it, now it allows us to get out.
Jadon Sancho's in a Champions League final, Craig.
It's amazing for him. I mean, he had this great game in particular in Dortmund. We talked about it. He hasn't, I mean, to be fair, if you go and look at his Bundesliga games preceding that, they have been inconsistent. But there's no doubt he's a much happier bunny where he is. And by the way, where would you rather be at this moment in time? And I'm not just talking about tonight. You know, I'm talking about in the last few weeks. Would you rather be... And you've made me squeeze Man United into a Champions League semi-final.
No, not at all.
You know, look, there's one place that's a shambles at the moment and, you know, it cannot be a great atmosphere, and that is Manchester United. And you've got Dortmund where he's happy. This is a great place to be. They've got a final to look forward to. So we can discuss the whys and where nots about where it all went wrong, but it is what it is, and he's in the final.
Frank, you mentioned Kylian Mbappe. You talked about how tactically Borussia Dortmund did excellently to contain him. However, people will come at you and say, well, look, people did everything tactically to stop Lionel Messi, to stop Cristiano Ronaldo. If we're putting Kylian Mbappe on that pedestal, it's nights like these that he's got to prove the difference.
That's true, and they will be right. And I was frustrated. The first leg, we didn't see anything, but we say, OK, maybe. And Jürgen, you alluded it, at the beginning of the show, saying that we are expecting something. It never happened. It's like he never wanted to go into the game and take the lead and say, OK, I'm going to show you guys, you know, how we're going to go for it. Dembélé tried a little bit, was quite inconsistent at some point, but we never saw Mbappé. He was trying to do something, seeing that he couldn't go. He was coming back and giving the ball back to either Fabian or Rhys or Vitinha. He never tried. He never went for the challenge. And it's why I was frustrated. If you are a player with that talent, Messi would have gone for it. Ronaldo would have gone for it. Maybe they would have been stubborn. But he never tried. And that's very frustrating because you know the talent that he has and you know that he can be... He can create a difference, and he didn't today.
How do you explain that, Jürgen?
Well, you know, his head is somewhere else, maybe. You know, his head is full, or, you know, he's too worried about what comes up next, you know, in his career, which is all understandable. But this is the game where you have to show up. This is the game where, you know, you as a manager, you hope that your leader, your best player, you know, will prove a point, you know, and you put all your cards into his basket. And he was not able to do that. He was not able to make the difference or send out signals during the game, also emotional signals, not necessarily has to score a goal right away or get a penalty or whatever, but he has to do something with his body language, with his energy, to kind of pull with all the other guys in the right direction. And that was not the case. So you had a feeling that there's no real leader on the field of PSG tonight. And this is sad because those are the games, you know, they're not coming back anymore. And you regret those games because you say, you know, if I would have shown up that game or would have done a little bit more, the 5 or 10%, even if I was tired, I was whatever issues I had, you know, I could have done that much better and we would have gone to Wembley in that specific year. And so it's a huge missed opportunity for Mbappé and for Paris Saint-Germain.
I think he, at least the image that we see from Mbappé in today's match and in the last week's match, too comfortable allowing other guys taking a leadership role in the attack. Too comfortable allowing Dembele running with the ball and Barcola running with the ball and Vitinha being their best player. At some point, you, because of who you are and your skill set and your stature in the game, you have to be the one that says, no, me. Give me the ball. So many times we think of Kylian Mbappe as a guy who says me about the contract conversations, the negotiations, the rumors, the news, the front page. But it's in this sort of moment in the game in which I want you and we want you to say me. Give me the ball. Because I am the one that has the skill set and has the tool to make a difference. I cannot be as good as Mats Hummels has been over the last couple of games and Nico Schlotterbeck. I cannot be controlled and dominated by Mats Hummels at this point in his career. Mm-hmm. You cannot allow that to happen if you're Kylian Mbappe. As good as he might have been, and I'm not taking credit away from the center backs because they were great, and the back four, they were great. Not taking credit from them. But at this point, in Mats Hummels' career, he cannot be capable of controlling Kylian Mbappe if Kylian Mbappe is running at him with speed. But we never saw that. Now, you can give credit to Hummels in that he didn't expose himself and he didn't allow that to happen. But Mbappe never forced it, never actually made it happen himself. And if Kylian Mbappe is not doing it, what are we expecting Dembele to be consistent all of a sudden? That's never going to happen. We're expecting Bradley Barcola to make the difference. Well, he's a young guy. Vitinha's hitting shots from everywhere trying to make it happen. Didn't quite work out for him. So you look at Mbappe to be the guy, and if he's not the guy, who is? Nobody.
It seems the king's ransom they paid him to stay in the end was not worth it.
Nope.
Now, he stayed to be the difference maker, and he was not. Maybe he would have been the difference maker had he gone to Real Madrid before he led everybody down the garden path, including Real Madrid and the PSG at times before he turned on some claptrap story about Project. Maybe he would have been a difference maker there. But he had to be the guy that stood up in this game. Now, you mentioned, we talked about it last week, the Messis and the Ronaldos. They just had something special at those key moments that drove their sides to excellence, to brilliance, to the pinnacle. He didn't have it. And I tell you what, he's going to go to Real Madrid, and we all know that. But he goes to Real Madrid, and there's a guy at Real Madrid I would have before him at this moment in Vinicius Jr.
Really?
Who is the difference maker in big games, who does turn up, and who does do special things. I know he's won a World Cup. I know he's a great player. Right? But I think he has to refocus a little bit on what this game is all about for him. You know? And been able to balance out what he's striving for as an individual and what's most important as a team. And I don't think he's quite figured that out yet. Even at this, maybe he will when he goes to Spain. Maybe he will. But he was a major, major disappointment. I mean, it's not just this game.
No.
Barcelona, two legs. A poor Barcelona side, another defensively poor side. He was not great. Semi-finals, two legs, Borussia Dortmund, not great. That's not what you're looking for when you pin yourself up as a superstar.
Go on, Frank.
I have a question for the guys, you know, and Jürgen said that maybe his head was already somewhere else. Don't you think that the fact that it could have been a Paris Saint-Germain Real Madrid final was into his head and that he was maybe subconsciously wondering what would be his attitude fighting against the next club he's going to play, maybe winning against the next club he's going to play, that maybe that was too hard to analyze.
Frank, what if you answer your own question? What would you say?
I would say that It shouldn't happen. You should go do your job and see what's going on. But it's true that I imagine myself, you know, giving my big time for Strasbourg, for example, knowing that I'm going to sign for Chelsea and we're going to play the final of the Champions League against each other. So, what will be the welcome from the fans if I win the Champions League? And then you start thinking too much about that. and maybe you start not playing your game the way you should play it.
Well, he wasn't great against Barcelona for two legs, and he knows he's not going there. And I don't think it's a factor at all, because I think at one point we all thought Man City were going to knock Real Madrid out, particularly in the second leg. Didn't happen. Look, there's no... I don't think that comes into it. If the worst-case scenario, if people think of it that way, it was PSG-Real Madrid at the final, he scores a hat-trick. All he's doing is showing Real Madrid. You know, there'll be a few fans that will be, oh, yeah, just a few.
Yeah.
Most of them will be like, that's what we're getting. That's what we're getting. So I don't think that's a factor.
Talk us through the goal, Frank. Defensively, where did it go wrong for PSG?
Well, you know, when you have the tallest guy, you know, to take care of, and you have nobody, or maybe I think it was Berola on him, and you can feel that he's completely alone, something is wrong. But again, I have the feeling, and we talked about that last time, where, you know, the zone marking is very into the game right now. Therefore, no responsibility for that. I don't know. I don't understand that. But it happened to Borussia Dortmund as well, where Marquinhos put the header and was on his own. I don't understand that. You know, when you have Hummels, and I would have taken care of it. I would be grabbing his shirt, you know, trying to keep him down. And he was on his own. It's too easy. The guy is huge, he's tall, he's talented. Thank you very much.
How much blame will Luis Enrique get for this, Frank?
Well, yeah, he has to be blamed. I mean, we have a coach here with Jürgen. I don't know how he see that. And we talked about that so many times. I love to give responsibilities for the players. It's like who takes a penalty? Who is the second to take a penalty? And we see arguments in the middle of the park with players, you know, arguing because they want to shoot the penalty. It should be said, done, tried before. That's professional. We are talking about professional players. We have to know who's marking Hummels. And if you decide to go in zone, and when you see that, I'm sorry, you're responsible for that.
Jürgen, who would you pin the blame on for that?
Now, for us coaches, it's this discussion, you know, zonal marking, man marking is a very, very intensive one because obviously a little bit our more traditional approach is clearly, you know, that we coaches like more the man marking approach because you give clear responsibility to each player being responsible for whoever you tell them to mark, you know, whoever will then be the one that they are responsible for. If you go into zonal marking, it is also at the very end, and that's maybe sometimes a misunderstanding of how people kind of look at it, it's still happening then they go man against man in that specific zone. So no matter if you now go man marking or zonal marking, when the ball comes in your zone, whoever comes into your little tiny zone, you are responsible to make sure that your opponent coming into this little area is not scoring, you know? And this is now something where obviously players get away with it because they have an alibi. Because, okay, you know, I didn't see the guy coming 5 yards out and jumping over me.
Exactly.
But, you know, this is something that, you know, you can discuss up and down and argue up and down. And then they say, you know, they call the coaches a little bit old school. If they say we go back to man marking, I would be mostly man marking if I have the choice or if I do it actually. And other coaches say, you know, no, I'm going fully zonal. But if you go fully zonal, I want to be a striker again because I've run from 10 yards at you and overjump you every time, even at the age of 60.
Exactly. And you're sorry, but exactly. But on top of that, you know, if you're saying that if the guy's in your zone, you are responsible. But if you have two guys in your zone, so are you responsible for the two guys because nobody's going to help you out? So, I mean, I understand what you're saying, but and you just said it at the end. You would have loved to face a team who plays in zone because you're so free. And you can run and go in between two players. And we saw that with Beraldo and Marquinhos not having a clue where Hummels is. That's a big problem for me.
I'm not going to go on about zonal and man marking. But let's not forget, that wasn't the goal that knocked him out. That was just the icing on the cake, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah, indeed.
They were already through at that point.
Yeah.
That was just...
That would help. It just helps him cross the line. Yeah, by the way, Frank and Jürgen's Zonal Marking podcast drops next month.
Yep.
Be sure to check that out. In the meantime, the Gavin Jules podcast. Oh, I bet Jules is loving life at the moment. Yeah. Crikey.
You reckon he's cried?
Yeah, I think so.
Probably.
I think he's definitely cried. A lot. Bayer Leverkusen, of course, have made everyone else cry in the Bundesliga this season. They're looking to add Bochum to their list. Two games to go, they remain undefeated. And if they go those two games without losing, of course, they will make history. 1:30 Eastern on ESPN+. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Can you remember the last time you had fun on a bike ride? Lectra e-bikes, the number one seller of e-bikes in America, is here to bring fun and joy back to biking. Their riders routinely say they feel like kids again riding these bikes, and one even said, I'm a 46-year-old man and can honestly say I haven't had this much fun on a bike since I was 10 years old. These e-bikes from Lectric are fast, up to 28 miles an hour. They offer lightweight and foldable e-bikes so you can easily take them on the go to explore national parks, campgrounds and more. Even if you don't have a truck, trailer or bike rack, many of their models will fit in the trunk of a car. They also offer long-range batteries that provide over 65 miles of range so you can explore further and longer. Head over to electricebikes.com today and take their bike quiz to find a model that's perfect for your needs. That's electricebikes.com. Right then, to the Premier League, of course, the title race is going to go right down to the wire. Arsenal, interestingly enough, are playing Manchester United, of course, on Sunday. Manchester United grabbing all the headlines for all the wrong reasons once again yesterday. After that 4-0 defeat against Crystal Palace, you want some facts? They've conceded 81 goals in all competitions. That's the most in a season. The season hasn't even finished yet since 1977. 13 Premier League losses in 35 games. That's the first time ever in the club's history. They have let opponents have 317 shots since New Year's Day. That is the most among every single Premier League side, including the likes of Sheffield United. Casemiro was dribbled past 8 times versus Palace.
Is that good?
That's the most in a Premier League match this season. Ten Hag actually was pretty honest, wasn't he, afterwards about everything. And he was asked about whether or not he's the right manager. Absolutely. Fair play. What else is he going to say? He's not going to say, no, sack me now. You know, don't worry about compensation.
No, what's he going to say? Well, that was pants.
Frank and Jürgen are still with us. There was so much demand for you yesterday. It was crazy.
Really?
People wanting to hear your opinion on what happened at Selhurst Park.
I'm not having that.
No, honestly, there was. It was frightening.
Interesting.
People like you.
All four of them.
But yeah, some people just like to see you angry, one of the two. Another new low almost, wasn't it?
Yeah. Look, if it had been an exception to the rule, we could you can brush it under the carpet, you know, and say, well, look, they have all these injuries. Everybody keeps mentioning injuries. And you can sort of say, OK, that was a one-off. But there has been so many of these. Maybe that was... I'd have to go back and look. But maybe that was one of the worst. But there's been a lot.
Mm.
So I don't think it's... The only reason it's survivable for him, in my opinion, is if they don't have the appetite to find somebody else, they don't think that person is out there. And we all know the Bayern situation and they're struggling for a manager and Thomas Tuchel is leaving. He may leave a Champions League winner again. So we don't know that. But I think And not to say Erik ten Hag is a bad manager, because he's had success at Ajax, but he's clearly lost his way here at this football club. You know, the way they're playing, we know they can't defend, we know they have those injuries, but even when they've had fit players, teams have been pummeling them. Average teams have been pummeling them. You know, with the graphic said about the shots since New Year, since the turn of the year, has been incredible, really. And it doesn't matter who they're playing. It could have been Bournemouth, it could have been Burnley, it could have been Luton, it could have been anybody.
Didn't have Coventry.
Coventry in the FA Cup. They were absolutely clinging on. It's not like it had to be Man City, Liverpool or Arsenal and they were getting a tonking. The fact that they had those two results against Liverpool were amazing in themselves and really scuppered Liverpool's season. But I honestly don't think it's survivable. I just don't see... And by the way, it's not just him. And there's been rumours that there's a lot of players going to go in the transfer window. But the trouble is, it's easier to get rid of the manager than it is a bunch of these players. You look at Casemiro, he's been the one everybody's talking about because he's on this long contract. But, you know, he's a quality player who just can't do it anymore. Some of the other ones are wannabes. They're just wannabes. And, you know, you've got the likes of Antony and others, Marcus Rashford. They're stuck with these guys on huge wages. And for Antony's part, they've paid a huge transfer fee for him, which you can't look away from the manager because he pushed for it. You can talk about the injuries all you want. There is no excuse, in my opinion, because the picture has been painted over the whole course of a season, not just what we saw yesterday at Selhurst Park. And for all those reasons, I think his position for the investment that's put into the club is simply untenable.
Jürgen, what if you get a phone call from Sir Jim Radcliffe? He says, Jürgen, I love you as a coach. I'm not as keen as you swearing on television as you do, but we'll get past that. Looking at what you would do if you would take over at Old Trafford, how do you fix this as a coach? Is it fixable?
Listen, you cannot judge it from the outside. You have no idea. So what we can judge, all of us, obviously, as fans, is they played good or they played bad. They won or they lost, you know, and then we make up our minds and say they have a catastrophic season, which they had, you know. So they have two more games to go, and then the season is over, and they have a lot of work ahead of themselves in the off season. A lot of work. You know, they need to make decisions. If it's the manager, if it's players, if it's a lot of other things that we don't know. We don't know. We are not sitting on the inside. So only people on the inside of Man United can really kind of make a judgment. And obviously they have to make decisions then how they want to move forward. But it's obviously for every football fan, especially if you're a football fan of Man United, it's a very difficult period of time because we are used to see Man United always in the top four of the Premier League. We see them always in the final eight of Champions Leagues. And having seen them playing this way, especially now, like the game against Crystal Palace, is highly, highly disappointed. But you cannot give them any advice from the outside because you don't know what goes on the inside.
Frank, we know Casemiro isn't the player that he was when he was so successful with Modric and Cruz at Real Madrid. Yet surely a player of that sort of experience, even though he's playing an unfamiliar role at centre-back, can use that football experience, that football knowledge, to make better decisions than he did yesterday.
Yeah. I think you're right. He should. But if we cannot make a judgment, as Jürgen say, we can wonder, we can ask questions, you know, why those players who are all internationals, who are very good with their countries, like Dalot, like Casemiro, and so many others, Onana as well, as was very good last year before coming to Manchester United, and lost everything. So, of course, we don't know what's going on in the dressing room, but how come from Real Madrid, even if you are not the players you used to be, you can lose almost everything in a year and a half? I don't get it. Almost 2 years, two seasons. I don't get it. I don't believe, because I was such a fan of Casemiro. And what I saw yesterday is somebody who lost the appetite, who lost the feeling, and is not the one that I know. And with all the football knowledge that we've seen throughout the years that he played for Real Madrid and Brazil. That's not understandable for me. And so I want to ask questions. Why those players can't play together with all the talents that you have? We compare Chelsea and Manchester United, but Chelsea, they're young players. What we see in Manchester United is even worse because they're all experienced players. So they should sort out, even without the coach. But maybe egos, I don't know what's going on, or something else happens in the dressing room which makes the thing doesn't work.
I don't want to deflect attention away from Casemiro. And certainly had a really, really tough game against Crystal Palace. But it doesn't help. If you don't have the legs, right, and he knows that he doesn't have the legs, it doesn't help that you have more legs than the guy next to you in Johnny Evans.
But then Manchester United fans will go, yes, you see, that's our problem because Lindelof's out, Martinez is out, Maguire is out.
Right.
You know, and they would list these Luke Shaw, you keep going.
Right, okay. So to that end, what I would say is the mistake, first of all, in putting that pairing out there, that had disaster written all over it. Certainly playing against the guys that you were playing against who have speed and skill and they rotate possessions in and out and they have power. And you look at the matchup and you go, this doesn't add up. This doesn't make sense. And so then I go back to the manager and say, all right, look, if we have these limitations in this back line and we know we cannot keep up, we know we don't have the legs to keep up, then why are we in a back and forth game? At this point is when you need to see managerial decisions. Say, no, we're going to sit behind the ball. And we're going to get behind the ball and we're going to get deep in our own half. And we're going to force turnovers and hopefully we get a counterattack, we got Nacho, and maybe we run into something. But this team has no plan. This team is all over the place. They're stretched when they are not supposed to be stretched. They're underneath the ball when they're not supposed to be underneath the ball. And the game was calling for them to be a whole lot more conservative defensively. And no, Anthony's over there. Garnacho's over there. Nobody's defending through the middle. What, are you asking Christian Eriksen to defend through the middle? Is he going to be the answer to you defensively? No. So then it's all up to Kobbie Mainoo to cover all the space? No. So my point is, yes, Casemiro was an issue. And Johnny Evans is an issue. But if you know that coming in, then set up your team accordingly. And that wasn't happening.
I mean, they're one of the... Out of all the biggest clubs, they're one of the ones that you look at and say... And you honestly sit and look and go, what the hell have they been working on in midweek?
Yep.
What have they been doing? What are they trying to do? Right, it might not come off, but what are they trying to do? And there's no sign that there's any coherent strategy and what they're trying to do. I mean, we can look at the Brightons and the Tottenhams and the Aston Villas. These clubs are trying to be something and they're trying to do it a certain way. Doesn't always work, but they're trying something. There's a clear identity to what they're trying. There is nothing at Man United. And where this injury scenario, bad defence, nobody's available, falls flat in its face, is these players all have been available at some point during the season. They were available when they get walloped at home to Bournemouth. They were available when it was the Alamo at Brentford. They were available when Luton were when they won at Luton. I think they won at Luton, but it was hanging on. Some of those players were available for the Coventry game. The list goes on. So yeah, you can, if you've got recency bias, you look at it and say, well, that wasn't a very good defence at Crystal Palace. And then you delve deeper and look back at most of the games this season, and a lot of those players, Varane, at different times, Lindelof, Maguire, Shaw, they've all been available, and yet they had the same problems when those guys were able to go in the starting lineup. There's nobody, apart, you give Rasmus Højlund a pass, he says, a young man, works hard, can't fault him. But you look at even the players that they've brought in, even in the summer, even Onana yesterday,
yeah,
and in previous games, and Mason Mount, obviously he's had an injury ravaged season, but even when he's been fit, he looks like a guy who thinks, oh my God, I've just made one of the big... Not that Chelsea are great, they're not. Of course they're not, but as a player you make a decision, and his decision he thought was going to a club that were on the front foot, and whilst he's been poor himself, and you know, as I say, he's been out, he's got to be thinking to himself, I've just made a terrible move here.
I'm not advocating violence, right?
Oh dear.
Okay, I'm not.
This never starts well.
But if you're losing in the manner in which you are, and the other team starting to knock the ball around in the manner in which they were.
The Olés?
The Olés and the back heel, and I said it yesterday, the little flick-on action. If you have anything about you as a team, you're kicking somebody. You're kicking somebody. At the very least, you're going to get into somebody and you're going to kick somebody. Because it's a bare minimum of competing. And Manchester United were not even close to doing that.
Listen, we can agree on that one, just briefly, West Ham. Right, here's a scenario. West Ham fans, whether they're right or not, and time will tell, were, not them all, but a lot of them were hell-bent on, they wanted change. This is, and David Moyes, you know, they were nowhere near relegation. They've won the Europa Conference League, the first time they've ever won a European trophy. There was some good times, but there was not always good football. And the fans, to them, it was unacceptable. And yet, at United, this seems to be there was no excuse for Moyes, who has a much smaller budget. No excuse whatsoever. And yet, at United, people seem to be looking for avenues to let the manager off the hook. Have the standards at that club fallen that much that West Ham are demanding things are better and United are saying, this guy needs more time?
Jürgen, we discussed yesterday the possibility that if, say, Ten Hag leaves, who would come in? The name Thomas Tuchel came up. As a manager, how much do you look at the name and the size of the club? Like Manchester United, of course, it doesn't get much bigger. But then how much do you analyse what's actually going on at the club and within the squad? Like, does your ego think, yes, I can come in, I'll take over, I will solve these problems? Or do you think, do you know what? I don't think now's the right time.
I think when it's in a summer break now, like now, you know, obviously you go into a break. The European Championship will happen. The Copa America will happen. You take your time. I mean, you take your time. Even obviously, it's a very, very big name, Man United. It's a very, very attractive name to any manager out there. Also for Thomas Tuchel, obviously. But you take your time. You want to evaluate this. You want to talk to other coaches, maybe even to the coach that has to leave, if he has to leave. And you want to get as much information as possible. Then you make yourself a good picture about the roster. You go through every single player, check things out, and you talk to other people that know the club really well. So you got to do your homework. You know, it's not a move where you kind of, during the season, you know, they fire one and there's the opportunity and you jump on it, yes or no. You might do that overnight. But this is now a move that you're going to do this summer where there's no need to jump on it overnight. There's time now, plenty of time to analyze the situation and see if you fit there or maybe not.
Just a reminder, of course, Manchester United can still win one piece of silverware before the season ends. That is, of course, the FA Cup. They're in the final against Manchester City.
That's a problem.
Live and exclusive. Whoever it would be a problem. Yeah. Live and exclusive on ESPN Plus. That's live, May 25th.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Right then, Wednesday sees the second semi-final of the week. It is Real Madrid against Bayern Munich. Real Madrid at the Santiago Bernabeu. Of course, our favourites. 2-2 it was in the first leg. Frank, are you going for Real Madrid in this one?
Yes. They should. But if Bayern Munich can cope a little bit, can copy what Borussia Dortmund did today, meaning maybe, you know, not allowing Vinicius Junior to do the difference, they're capable of doing something and surprise. And the season is full of surprises, so why not? But overall, yes. It shouldn't be a problem for Real Madrid, except that they play against Bayern Munich, and you never know what can happen. They can wake up, they can do something special, and win that game.
Good news for Bayern fans, Jürgen, is it looks like De Ligt is back fit and will start.
Well, it's always good news when you get players back at your disposal. So now he can decide if De Ligt is playing or Kim-min Jae is playing, how he wants to do that. I mean, key for them certainly is that they have to be very strong in defensive midfield. They have to screen really, really well for their back four and make sure that the balls are not passed through to the incredible attacking line of Real Madrid. They know that Madrid probably is the favorite, but it doesn't bother Bayern Munich because they have the confidence to go to any place in the world and say, we'll give it a go and we might win this game. So I can imagine watching a game there that goes all the way till the end, maybe even till penalty shootouts.
Oh, yes, of course. Well, the Germans would love that, wouldn't they?
Yeah, well, not against an old Germany final at all, but it would be a lot to take, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would. The bragging from Jürgen, Derek, Archie. Yeah.
Derek,
yeah. It should be a great game, shouldn't it? I'm really looking forward to it.
Would I be sitting here shocked if it was Bayern Munich? No, I would not. Because they could, you look at those players, some of them, they could turn it on in a heartbeat. But maybe they could take a little leaf out of Dortmund, and there has to be, from a defensive aspect, and there has to be an appetite from the wide players to do a defensive job. There just has to be. And I think Dortmund showed that if it is Pavlovic and Laimer, they have to have those two and Musiala on a piece of rope, and you come, boys. You can't have them just watching the game whilst, just enjoying themselves while the rest of them are defending, and they're going to have to defend. And I think Dortmund did a really good job of that, is leaving Füllkrug and getting the rest back, and they all rolled their sleeves up. They'll have to do that. If they decide to leave themselves open a little bit and take the game to Real Madrid, who knows which way they'll go about it, that's when those two in that back four could get exposed. Dortmund never really allowed that to happen. In either of the two games, they sat a little bit deeper. And I wonder if Bayern will do that. But I still think Real Madrid will go through. But I think it's going to be a close one.
So to your point, do we really see Leroy Sané doing the same defensive work that Karim Adeyemi was willing to do? ask ourselves in the profile of a player, is that guy willing, capable, and able to do that job consistently for you? Evidence will tell us that that's not quite the case. And in the midfield, an area of perceived weakness of Bayern Munich is an area of strength for Real Madrid.
By this time tomorrow, then, we will know who will be in the Champions League final to face the Borussia Dortmund. Will it be an all-German affair? We will find out. And, of course, that will be the main topic on the next edition of the show. We'll say thank you to Jürgen as we take a look at what's going on in La Liga this weekend. Real Madrid, of course, already champions their way against Granada. Monday, Barcelona take on Real Sociedad. By that stage, of course, they could be more points behind Girona, who are in action. Where are they?
Alaves on Friday.
There you are. Oh, it's at the top. That's what I see.
Top away.
Alaves on Friday. Meanwhile, in the Championship, of course, we're at the semi-final stages of the playoffs. They are back-to-back on Sunday. Leeds taking on Norwich, Southampton against West Brom. Both those games available on ESPN+. Speaking of ESPN+, a special, Football Americas, is available now. Also on YouTube as well, because it's the YST Group Reveal Show. With all kinds of guests, we'll have teams in the event, including Chris Paul, Pat McAfee, JJ Watt, and Chad Ochocinco-Johnson. There you go. Be sure to check that out on ESPN+ now, also on YouTube.
That's what we're missing in this show. Bit of that.
Bit of what?
No idea.
I don't know.
Well, that we're missing a lot on this show.
Smooth.
That's it. That brings us to the end of today's programme. Frank is back, though, to answer your questions for extra time. Welcome in. There's the latest edition of Extra Time. Craig's here, Ali as well. Frank LaBeouf is with us. Thank you. Thank you very much, Frank.
Spider-Man.
Frank, I felt a bit of a passive aggressiveness from you today when you said, well, it's very difficult to give you an answer when the others have spoken first. So do I need to go to you more first? Is that what you prefer?
Oh, no, no, you do whatever you want, and I know you are not deciding as well. I guess the producer decides to...
I decide, Frank, don't worry.
Oh, you decide. No. So, can you change that sometimes? You know, ask me the question first, you know, maybe I have something nice to say, instead of, you know, again saying what the people already said, but whatever.
Whatever, not bothered.
He's giving the producer far too... He doesn't even know there's a show going on right now. It's his own world. Planet. He's in his own planet.
He's just watching old squash videos.
He's right.
Right.
Hey.
Right, Frank. Defensive masterclass by Borussia Dortmund or luck?
Oh, no. It was a masterpiece today. And the first leg as well. And yeah, I found them so accurate, you know, on dealing with every sorts of problems, you know, that Dembele or Mbappe could have created. But it's, again, you know, so I always say that, yeah, the back four, they were good, the goalkeeper was good, but during the show, Ali alluded a little bit of that, where everybody did his part. Adeyemi, but also Fulkrug today, worked for an hour, making sure that every time that he got the ball, he was keeping it, allowing his teammates to go a little bit forward. It was such a relief. They worked so hard all together. It's nothing with luck. Yeah, of course, it's part of it, you know, with the post that Paris Saint-Germain touched, but they did everything to win that game.
Can you guess who this is from? Mm-hmm. Why has Jan the Man always right when he predicts who will go through?
Okay. He's stuck in the third place.
What happened to Mo Salah, eh? To Saudi Arabia. Where's that? Where's that, Jan? With your predictions.
As I was saying earlier, if you bang on enough about this, about the one team, eventually something's going to happen, you know what I mean?
Now, is this self-proclaimed Jan the Man, or is this something that he's called around the world?
No, this is definitely self-proclaimed.
This is him in a hotel coming up with his name.
Yes, very much so. Excellent. Yes. Maybe he checks into the hotel.
Yes.
Mr. Fjortov, call me Jan the Man.
Jan the Man.
I'm travelling to Manchester this weekend for my first Premier League game, watching Manchester United against Arsenal with my dad and brother. Craig, can you get really mad and say something that will fire up the United squad? Thanks in advance. What a first game to go to. Crikey. It could be a bit of a disaster.
Well, first things first, take some blindfolds.
Yes. Yeah.
make sure you can't... Can't see the United team.
Yep, hope it's not raining because Old Trafford's got a leaky roof.
It's always raining. Make sure you take something waterproof.
Yep.
Take a packed lunch because the food's not very good.
Great nightlife in Manchester, though. Go out, have a good time.
Nothing could fire up that United side.
For all, the last sign that PSG management was horrible and had too many stars to manage. Messi, Neymar, Mbappe. What's the reason for their average performance this season, Frank?
It's always, for me, it's always the same problem. You feel that at some point, it's always comfortable for the Paris Saint-Germain players that they don't feel in danger, that they don't have to, you know, to play for their lives, kind of. I played for Marseille, and I can tell you the pressure that you feel because of the fans, you know that you have to win, otherwise you could be in danger. Yeah, it's getting a little bit easy in Paris Saint-Germain. They changed the fans, they got rid of the crazy ones, let's say. And it's more spectators than anything else, even if you have a good atmosphere. But it's coming also from the club and the board. You don't feel the players that they have to win. I would be the chairman of Paris Saint-Germain. I would have come and said, guys, we have to win. There is no other option. I'll tell you, you win or you're going to be in danger. Maybe it's not going to work, but you have to have that feeling. And in Paris Saint-Germain, you feel that you never have that feeling.
Danger. Looking at danger. Hey.
Hey.
They didn't get to a semi-final last when Messi was there, did they? I don't know. What am I asking you for?
You're looking for answers?
No. Why did they interview the chairman after the game? I don't understand that.
Well, that's a bad, don't I?
But he comes down, I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
He comes down, they're interviewing him in the flash zone.
I don't know.
What's his business there?
I don't know. Florentino Perez might pop down there tomorrow, who knows? What's going on?
I don't think so.
Did we ever find Shaka's missing tooth?
Where is Shaka?
Yeah, well, exactly. never mind Shaka's missing tooth. Shaka's missing.
Has football ever made you cry?
I imagine you're asking me because no.
Well, no, he might have cried back in the day. Who knows?
Yeah, I probably have to go back when I was a kid. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe a tough loss.
I lost the final once, I remember.
Yeah.
Malian under 12s against St. Austell.
And were there tears flowing?
There were tears afterwards, yeah.
I may have cried after winning a title as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. After a big game with Venezuela as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Tears of joy with my family.
What about you, Craig? No tears?
Yeah,
When's the last time?
I didn't figure. I figured that was a clear answer there.
Frank, you're an emotional man. You're in touch with your feelings.
When I was young, yeah, that was every time I was losing a game, I was crying,
yeah.
But and when I was watching the semi-final 1982 of France against Germany, we were leading 3-1 during the extra time, and we drew and we lost in the penalties. And I was 14, and I think I cried after the game, and I got very mad. But I never cried because I won something. And when we won the World Cup, I saw Christophe Dugarry crying, and I almost went to him to ask him why. Yeah, we won, you know, I'd be happy. I never cried because of winning something.
Oh. For Craig, how impressed were you with Vitinha's performance today? He was probably the best player on the pitch during the game. Probably over the two legs of PSG.
Yeah. Tried to almost drag his team through, didn't he?
Yeah.
As a youngster. And they have got some good youngsters. There's no doubt about that. They've got some good young players, and maybe that'll be positive for them going ahead. But yeah, I think the question will be, when is his exit? When does he go? Because he's going to go to another level, isn't he? Which is not PSG, you know. Let's be honest about it.
Final question.
Why don't you give me that silly look there?
What silly look?
Just...
If there was a movie made with all the ESPN FC panel members as cast, who would be the hero? I think we can all agree on who would be the villain.
By the way. Steve is the director now. Steve, the movie's a mess.
So Craig is the villain. I think that's fair enough. Although normally it's bald people. Bald people are victimised, aren't they, Frank, when it comes to the villain in movies? You think of Bond films.
True.
And Robbo would be in leading roles, wouldn't you?
Yeah. And maybe Ali will come very close to us as well.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
But,
last Bond.
Don't you see Shaka in kind of a... You know, I love District 99. Do you know that, District 99?
I haven't seen that, no.
Is that one? That one? No, not District... Yeah, the TV show with the...
Okay.
In the cop in New York, and it's a funny TV show.
Right.
No, it's not District, it's something. I see him as the
is that Brooklyn?
The cop,
Brooklyn
the chief of
is
the
it,
district.
I don't know.
Brooklyn 99, thank
yes,
you very much.
There
Brooklyn
we go, there, 99. We, there we are. Now Brooklyn I'm with you. Yes, I have seen that. Yes.
On AMC.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry?
I see Shaka. I see Shaka being the captain.
All right, I see.
Is it on after Con Air?
Is it on after Con Air, Green Mile, Shawshank Redemption?
And The Rock.
Yeah.
The Rock.
I tell you what, Shaka would be some Bond, wouldn't he?
He'd be asleep or on holiday.
Yeah. What's his superpower? Bond. Sleeping?
He'd go up to whoever it is. Was it who used to be there? Miss Money? I don't know. I'm not a Bond fan.
Right.
And they'd say, Bond, that is your task.
Right.
And he'd be like, well, I'm going on holiday.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't got time for this.
I haven't got time to save the world. I'm on vacation. Where is he?
Shaka cannot
be the
hero.
He went to
Granada, didn't he?
Granada.
Yeah. That's he went there for a charity football match.
Have we had any report?
Nothing from him.
Not a word?
No.
Do we know if Stevie's back?
We don't know if Stevie's back.
All right.
It's all up in the air. All right. So we got Shaka as a hero.
We've got a license.
That's where we go.
What? Shaka's a hero? What does he? What? How does he get the villain? Sleeping?
Yeah, exactly. That's easily it.
super blinking power.
It's basically, it's a bit of a bad bunch when it comes to heroes, let's face it. Gab, what are you going to do? Right, that is it. That brings us to the end of today's show. We'll be back tomorrow.
Is Jürgen on tomorrow? Is it result dependent?
I don't know. I'm hearing Jürgen's not on tomorrow.
Oh.
So there'll be no swearing on tomorrow's show.
Well, okay, that's good. That's a positive.